Welcome back to the Ministry Without Hating It podcast, brought to you in partnership with Odyssey Haven Coaching and Counseling. We are dedicated to the pursuit of answering the question, is it possible to do ministry without hating it? We have a theory that it just might be. Hey, I'm Chad Garrison. I'm here with my friend, my co-host, my partner, Brenton Hill. Brenton, how you doing today?
I'm well. Good morning or good afternoon or evening or middle of the night, whenever you're listening to this.
That's right.
Yeah.
Good to have you here with us.
Thank you.
Well, hey, so today we get to sit down for a conversation with Gary Rocha. You and I, we've had the privilege of knowing and serving alongside Gary within ministry for, well, for me, it's been decades. I was actually Gary's youth pastor way back when, which is crazy since I'm only 20. I don't even know how that happened, but you know, it must be that new math. But Gary has served in several church ministry roles vocationally and voluntarily for many years, but has just finished his first year as a senior pastor in Genoa, Illinois. So we thought that it'd be a great resource for others to ask him about his first year leading a church and what wisdom that he would pass along to others. And Brenton, I'm sure you would agree, man, he had some gold. I was pleasantly surprised how much wisdom he has gained just in a short period of time, knowing especially where he was at even before that, and how God has really used this last year to shape him, and some of the things that he has learned, I think would be applicable to ministry leaders of any capacity.
Yep, I agree.
So we are excited to give you this conversation today. Gary grew up in Las Vegas and pursued the call of ministry the Lord placed on his heart while attending a summer camp. He has been leading in the local church for over 10 years as a worship leader, a next-gen pastor, an associate pastor, and a campus pastor. Gary and his wife, Bethany, have been leading next-gen camps for the past 5 years. He recently became the senior pastor of the Genoa Foursquare Church in Northern Illinois. Gary and Bethany have 3 wonderful little girls who love knowing and serving people. We hope that you enjoy our conversation with Gary Rocha. Well, it is my privilege to welcome our friend, Gary Rocha, to our podcast. Gary, thank you for making time to be here with us today.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for having me.
We like to start off, as I'm sure you've heard and listened because you're a subscriber to our podcast, right? That we want to start off by asking you, what does the word ministry mean to you?
You know, when I got this question, it took me a minute because I even looked up the actual word ministry in the dictionary, but then I thought that was complicating it. So I wrote down, it's really doing life and being with people. I mean, that's what the core of ministry is, doing life and being with people, because that's where you get to do ministry, is being with them outside of the church.
Okay. So then how has your own journey really, how has that contributed to shaping your definition of ministry?
I'd say over the years, you know, people like you, Chad, who is in my life, who have been in my life, people that took the time to pick me up and take me to church, pick me up and do activities or actually do ministry. And this thought process of, hey, we got to go put up tables and chairs, or we've got to go serve and go help a family move right now, and doing that together instead of the, you know, I've seen different types of leadership. I've seen gracious leaders and I've seen incompetent leaders, and I've experienced them both. And the best thing I could have done is follow and take notes from each leader, and keep my eyes on Jesus. But the best examples have really been those who have walked alongside with me, and worked alongside with me, instead of like a go and do as I say type of deal.
Okay. So yeah. When you say doing life, because I know that can be, I'm sure you've heard it, like in any kind of like ministry circles, that can be kind of that buzz, like, oh, we're just doing life on life together. Yeah. And that kind of thing. So can you just maybe just pull that out a little bit more? Because I know, instead of just saying, you know, we're doing life, and I might know what you mean, but maybe for others who don't or have a different definition, what does that actually look like for you?
Yeah, I've been a part of leaders' lives. They've allowed me into their homes. They've allowed me into the car, the conversations. You know, Chad, you're an example of that when you and I were in Perump, you, me, and then Lindsay, and the, you know, when the actual conversations were happening. And I had never really seen a marriage. I never had really had seen the healthy side and the sides that kind of make you feel, oh, wow, like you can have an argument and everything's going to be okay.
Wait, what are you talking about? We didn't argue, Gary. What? That never happened.
Yeah.
Young marrieds never argue. What are you talking about?
Never. But I would say it was things like that that mattered, or pastors that would allow me into their home, or even recently I've been a part of pastors' lives or leaders' lives that have told me or expressed to me some of their concerns in their own life, and allowing someone younger to speak into it. It's allowing other perspective, allowing people to do things through the lens of Jesus. And that's what's really helped me, is being able to look at everything and remove my emotion. And if you guys know me, or if you're listening, you've met me before, but I'm a very emotional person. And so I've learned to take my emotions out of my thought process. I do my best. It doesn't mean I'm not human. But really look at it through the lens of Jesus, and actually think, okay, what does the Bible say? Or how can we look at this from a different perspective? And that's when I talk about doing life, it's really doing things alongside each other, allowing people into your life and not having to put up 1,000 boundaries. It's still good to have healthy boundaries. Mm-hmm. But it's still, you know, you don't want to just shut off people quickly when life happens.
Right, right. So, Gary, you are doing life with a new congregation right now. You recently started senior pastoring a church for the first time. And can you describe for us what year one has been like?
You know, year one has been a true blessing. You know, I've heard many pastors say, oh, transitions are difficult. It's always, you know, you go through difficult times. And for Bethany and I, my wife and I, we've really embraced this season as a season of joy. And maybe it's because of what we walked through previously. Maybe it's because of just we had been in a COVID season. Who knows what it was? But I can truly say that this year in Genoa, Illinois, at Crosswind, it has been just joyous. It's been beautiful. There have been times where you sit back and go, God, why am I here? Why am I being trusted with this? I don't feel worthy of any of this that I'm doing right now, to be honest. But this past year, I would say, from conversations to the meetings to the weddings, the funerals, it's overall, you still see Jesus in all of it.
Yeah.
And that's how this year has been for me.
So that's really interesting, because to be honest with you, that's not the word that I expected to hear. So we're talking about what's, you know, explain your year one experience in one word. And you said joy. And I think of my year one, even where I'm at, and that's not the word that I would use, you know, because I've probably had some different scenarios. There's been a fair amount of either restoration that's needed to take place, or rebuilding in some ways, and even for sure healing, and that gets messy with people. So tell us then, what was the climate of the church? You know, you've just completed a year, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So your first year being in charge of everything, what was the climate of the church when you came in, and really the culture, as you took in this leadership position?
Yeah, so when I came in, the church had a pastor that had stayed for 2 years. And during those 2 years, you had the transition of a pastor that had retired after 41 years. So it's really difficult to take over a church after a longstanding pastor.
Sure.
And the people that came after the 41-year pastor, they came in, and some changes were made very quickly, and then you go right into COVID. And so a lot of those things can cause confusion, can cause hurt, can cause doubt, regardless of the scenario, the situations that did happen. When we came in, the church was still hurt, because they were starting to You know, they knew that this was the new culture after 2 years and then all time for a new change. And this guy's 32 at the time and thinking, oh man, what's he going to do? What's he going to bring? But in reality, it's been nothing but we support you. When Pastor Friend, he was here for 41 years, when they, you know, when he came on, he was around the same age, maybe a little younger than me. And so at first there was a little bit of a comparison, not in a bad way, but just saying like, there's just some good similarities.
Sure.
But it's different, you know, church 43 years ago, 44 years ago is different than it is today. And we're post pandemic. So even that's a huge change, but overall the church was embracing the change as well as mourning the loss of a pastor after a couple of years, because there had been relationship. But I would say that there is really healthy things that, that they had received from their 41 years of pastoring before that. That are continuations of those ministries.
Yeah. So what changes have you noticed in the church from the time you've started till now? What's been growing? What's changed?
What's changed is a big embrace for change. And knowing that we have to pivot a little bit and take some changes into account now in case there ever were another, let's say, shift in the culture of America.
Yeah.
Because there will be a shift. There's a continuing shifting happening. I think that there will be a growth dynamic spiritually and physically within churches. And for us, it's getting ready for knowing that we're not always going to have the luxury of all the sights and sounds, but relationship is the key thing. That's the biggest thing for our church is continuing relationship, because that's how Bethany and I have led over the past 10 years of being together, almost 10 years, is relationship. And so our church is really big on that, you know. And you have people that say they go to your church, but you haven't seen them once sit them in the building.
Yeah.
And yep. Those, I love those, because at least they know that they have a place to go in case of emergency.
Right, right. We have those too here. Congratulations on 10 years, by the way. That's awesome. 10-year anniversary.
We're almost there. Yep. Almost there. Well, 10 years of knowing each other. Okay. 9 years of being married. Sorry. You know, it feels like 10 years. I love that.
He's so excited. He wants to get ahead.
Yeah.
I want to draw us just pull a couple of things together that I've noticed already. It's really interesting. I would love for you to maybe expand a little bit on that. Yeah. So you start off by telling us your definition is doing life. It's the relationship. It's the as you go with people, right? Even I mean, and I think that's not scriptural. That's what Jesus says. He says, as you go, make disciples. And it sounds like, you know, your church and ministry specifically has experienced a lot of change in a short period of time, which I know a lot of pastors, you know, and can go, yeah, we all have, right? Thank you, 2020, right? But you specifically, I mean, it is a unique thing to transition in the middle of all of that as well, and then having had a transition just a couple of years before that. So my question is, you know, as you have walked with people and seen relationship become the focus, as you said, for you and Bethany, as you're doing ministry, I mean, what does that look like practically, you know, to be able to walk people through even more change? Because you're certainly going to have a different vision moving forward. But what is that? What has that looked like as you're walking with people, but knowing that you're also trying to guide them towards something different?
One of the best questions is why. And people are going to want to know the why and everything. And if you work with Next Gen, which I know you guys do, they like to ask why a lot. And so with even adults is giving them the why, giving them the full picture and drawing that out and giving the just in case it could change in a flip of a switch. And so for Bethy and I, how that's really looked with changes like would be we brought in, you know, we put in some lights and we didn't have to explain it immediately, but we put in lights far away so we can light up the stage more. Because we're going to get a camera and we need to get a better camera because we're, you know, there is a There is a demographic that watches online and they don't like our camera. They don't like our sound. So we made those changes, and those are just the physical changes. Now, when it comes to the doing part, okay. So for the church, and I think we can all agree that the church is really good at doing a lot and burn ourselves out.
Yeah.
And I've expressed to the church, I said, I don't mind doing things. However, if it's going to make us tired, it is pointless. Because by the time the people start walking through the doors that are new, we've already given ourselves to everything else except the people. And doing a lot of things won't get you the results that you are wanting, which is being with the Lord, being in the kingdom, and bringing people to know Jesus. So I've really taken this first year, and to backtrack a little bit, at the beginning of the year, we took off the first Sunday. We took off the first Sunday as an act of obedience to honoring the Sabbath and purposely explaining that we're taking a real day off. And it's great because it worked out. We had a snowstorm anyway, so we would have had to cancel church. But I really set it up for us to communicate that we have to rest. If we can't even rest, we're pointless. We're useless. And I've heard someone say it, and I don't know if this is illegal by quoting this, by not knowing who the person is, but you'll get a raise for breaking one of the Ten Commandments, and you'll get fired for breaking the other nine.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And, is that and
AJ Svoboda?
Oh, yeah. The Svoboda. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And it's important to remember that and to explain that to the church.
Yeah.
Because the church will have the expectation that the pastor has to do everything.
Yeah.
And expressing to them that, hey, I have a young family, and I don't discredit the sacrifices from leaders in the past, but I will learn from the mistakes, and I pray that future generations will learn from my mistakes.
Yep.
We won't grow if we don't learn from each other.
So it sounds like you're saying it's not just walking with, but it's also saying, hey, this is where we're going. And that this is why we're doing what we're doing. Is that a fair way to say that?
Yeah, that's been the foundation really laying for this year is we have to learn how to rest and let's have fun. But first we need to rest. And so, and coming out of the pandemic, oddly enough, you would think we would have had enough rest, but man, we've been running, trying to figure it out emotionally, physically. You know, the COVID-19 was a real weight gain for me. So
me too.
Yeah. And so you realize
wait. A weight game, not like wait and see, but weight as in like physical growth.
Like he put it on. Like,
you know how you have the freshman 15?
Yeah.
The COVID-19.
COVID-19. Yeah. Also, this episode brought to you by Dad Jokes. So Gary, I think it's fantastic because, you really hit, I think, something that, I think, especially in our own context here, I'll say for our church, that God keeps bringing me back to is that, and it's been said even by other guests recently, that the people are the most important part. They are the ministry. And if we can't lean into that that fact and then therefore make relationship the priority over the programs, over, you know, even how we get things done, our task list. I'm just finding that's what's going to drive me to hate what I'm doing because I'm doing the wrong thing, right?
No, I agree. I think that recently I went to the Global Leadership Summit and Craig Rochelle was speaking and talking about you have your four tiers and, you know, what's important, what's not important. And you realize that you have to say, okay, our youth, next gen, worship services, like these are the most important things. And that's tier one. And then you start to go down the line and go, what's tier two, tier three? And I realize that there are things that you do have to cut. And if it means like not doing a local event, it doesn't mean you don't care. It means that what is shown to be successful and not successful. And that's to go with communicating like, hey, we're not going to do this, but we're doing this instead. Or this is, you know, family events and, you know, we're going to do a church picnic. And you know, that's one of the big things that we're doing coming up. And it's so simple. We're going to provide fried chicken and everyone else bring a food that they want to share. And that's the event. It's just being together and not make it complicated. I love the saying, keep it stupid simple. And it really does help.
That's good. That's good. So you mentioned growing and learning. I'm curious now, you know, 1 year in, what are some of the lessons you feel like you've learned? And they can be good, bad, or, oh my goodness, I'll never do that again.
Find your margin.
Okay.
Don't jump over it and figure out, man, I shouldn't have done that. Really, really be real with yourself. Write down, is this really worth it? And finding a coach. I had a coach and he made me read a book, which is really good. You have a coach, go read a book. And it wasn't a bad thing, but the book was Free to Focus by Michael Hyatt. And the most profound thing in that whole book was every time you say yes to something, you're saying no to something else. Yeah. Something as simple as you said yes to that meeting, which means you're probably not having dinner on time when you get home. And so you realize that you have to be okay with the no, or as Bethany and I like to say now, saying yes to less, because it's really helped us understand and realize that everything else can wait. You've only got your kids once. You get to watch them grow up. We are blessed and able to homeschool right now, which allows us to have more time with our children and have more influence in them. It really is important for us to not make ourselves super busy. So examples of that would be, you know, don't say yes to just doing a bunch of events because you want to be, I guess my struggle is, you know, known or seen or even just a part and not feel left out of the table. And I would say in my first year, I said yes to something that I probably could have said no to. But I learned my lesson. There are some growing experiences in that. Would I ever say yes or no to that again? I would rather just weigh out where am I right now? I'm currently in school. I'm getting my undergrad in communications. There's a lot more going on than you would want. But it's also, I realized I can say no to things and not feel bad. And I don't mind expressing or communicating the why. Because there's nothing to hide. It's my family's first. This is what matters is that my church is right there, you know, because when I say yes to other events, it takes me away from the local church. It takes me away from my community, where in reality, you know, we look at the world, we look at the what's next or the TikTok or Instagram, or whatever it is. And you look at this big picture, but we forget that we have our own community, our own sector that we have to think about. And it's not bad to think about what's happening globally. There have been people that have been blessed to go out and be missionaries. We can support them. But the best thing that's helped me is to realize that I love DeKalb County. I love Northern Illinois. This is my home. And so my investment is in this area. It doesn't mean I don't have an investment in other places. It doesn't mean I don't care about other places. It just means that a big chunk of my focus is local.
Yeah.
I love it. It kind of reminds me of the phrase, since we're quoting people we can't remember, but that, you know, just because it's a good thing doesn't mean it's the best thing.
Right.
You know, and you kind of spoke to the whole FOMO thing, right? The fear of missing out. Mm-hmm. And that's a real thing for pastors. And it doesn't even matter the context. I'll find the littlest things. Like yesterday, I had stuff to get done. And I found out my staff were going to be having a meeting that I wasn't invited to. And I was like, well, what if something fun happens in that meeting? And, you know, they're like, you really don't need to be in here. It's, you know, we're not keeping anything. And it wasn't, you know, anything kind of like nefarious or whatever, but it was just one of those, like, we're just touching base. And I'm like, oh man, that would be a good thing. But right now the best thing for me is to get stuff done so I can actually give to them, you know, for something else. And so, that's I want to say hats off to you for having that self-awareness this early in the game, because that's just gonna serve you even more as you grow and continue in the years to come with your ministry.
Chad, that word self-awareness has become very real. I don't think we can grow, and maybe someone will hear this and say I'm wrong, I don't think we can grow and get better unless we're really self-aware of where we're at, where the root cause of our issues are. I've seen it. I've experienced it. I had uncommunicated expectations on people where they failed me, but yet they had no clue. And then I have to call them up and say, hey, I'm sorry. I thought you were a big time jerk.
Wow.
In reality, I built that in my own head, and that wasn't fair. And that was unclear, and it wasn't helpful to the body of Christ. And so there's been those conversations, and that self-awareness is probably one of the most important things. And, you know, in the 1 year I've been at the church, I maybe met one or two people in the church that say they are self-aware or becoming self-aware, which excites me, because we have to have those conversations and not be afraid of saying, you know, the word self-awareness. Or like, people make fun of this self-care, right? Self-care. Well, we need to take care of ourselves, right? But it's not always going and getting your Starbucks and, you know, sitting at the Starbucks for 5 hours. No, that's not self-care. Self-care is actually doing things for yourself, for your mental health, for physical body, things like that. And so I have some things that I do for myself, but not necessarily for everyone else is what works for them.
So you said, it sounds like another lesson there, right? So you said margin, but then also self-awareness. Mm-hmm. So how have you found, or what's been best, maybe a best practice that you could pass along to say, this is how I increase in self-awareness?
Quiet time with the Lord. I get really real, really just straight up raw and go, what is going on? Even something as simple as recently, I was visiting my mom, and she gave me these photos of me and my childhood, and it unlocked a whole bunch of memories. And I shut down, because I was just thinking, look at that kid. He doesn't have a clue what he's doing in his life. He's going to make so many mistakes between this age and this age, and it's going to help grow him to this. And it's going back and really, it's not reliving the past, but going, what was the root of that? What was the cause of that? What can I do to be better? Taking time, listening to the Bible. I'm a much better listener of the Bible. I do my best to read it. I'm better at listening, consuming it. Writing scripture down has really helped me, as well as understanding, you know, being able to take time and be with the Lord has really helped me in my self-awareness. I was able to have a coach, and the coach really helped me just get to some places, some points of awareness, and the encouragement is there. Don't fill yourself up with a whole bunch of things to do, but have people that do encourage you, have people that help you, because the coaching helped, or I even took the emotionally healthy leadership with Trey Abney, and I thought I was really healthy, and I was to a point. And then there are the failures that come in it, and it's not to beat yourself up, but it helps you go, oh, I can improve on that. I can get better.
Yeah.
And not just focus on the bad things. Now, granted, there are bad things that have happened, but you have to learn from them. If you don't learn from them, you're going to stay stuck in your own poop. You know, you got to actually get out of it.
Go forward.
Chad has taught me to ask a question of the people around me recently. And so I've been throwing this out there, but it's helped me be more self-aware. Yep. And it's, what's it like to be on the other side of me?
Oh yeah. Fun one.
And if they're honest with you, you get good feedback. If they're not honest with you, you feel really good about yourself. And, but it points out some of the holes that, you know, where I think I am one way, and what comes through, what other people respond to. And so that's helped me a lot. And just, but you have to ask that with a good heart and be able to receive it from the people that you're asking that question. Because
how do you react to that?
I just ask them recently. It's been just ask, and then thank you for sharing that with me. And if it's, I appreciate your openness or your confidence in sharing those things with me. And that's usually all I say about it in the moment.
Oh, that's good.
And then it gives me time to process, because, you know, when you hear things about yourself, They're not comfortable, especially, I mean, it's comfortable when they're like, oh man, it's great, but that's not really helpful. I'm not going to grow anyway. But when I hear the things where I'm missing the mark, or it gives opportunity to change perspective or explain yourself where you failed and ask for forgiveness, because maybe it's just miscommunication. It just opens up the door to more relationship with people.
I think that's key, Brent, what you said, because I'm coming back to even what Gary said. If the relationship is there to begin with, you know, that's, it may sting, but it's not going to be something that wounds you, you know, like, if I know this person that I'm having that conversation with, actually loves me and has the best, interest, my best interest in mind when they're communicating with me, it truly is speaking the truth in love. It's not, you know, a complaint or I'm lobbing an insult at you, but it's okay. Well, you're asking, this is what it is. And then the conversation can then be, okay, so how do we course correct here?
Yeah.
This is good, guys. This is really good. I'm proud of all of you.
We're all growing together, guys.
That's indeed.
That's the goal.
Let me ask you this, Gary. This is kind of becoming a, as this podcast continues to evolve, and we've learned a lot just in our short little span of even conversations with people. But one of the questions I keep kind of going back to more recently is when I ask you the question, how have you learned to do ministry without hating it? What's your response?
I would say that being in ministry, there's always going to be times that you don't enjoy. No offense. The word hate is probably the one word I truly dislike. So that's why I don't like saying it very much. But there's moments you don't enjoy. And it could be conversations that go round and round that never change. Those are ones that really, I think, can be wearing. And over time, that's when you have to just express and say, I don't think this is working out. I think a professional counselor might be the best person for this conversation. You know, being in ministry or being the lead pastor of a church and having to make those decisions that are not easy, you know, whether it be a financial one, whether it be whatever it is, you don't realize that, like, oh, once you become a senior pastor, you're making big decisions that you don't want to make. But you are entrusted, you've been given that, and don't abuse it. And so that's it. I would say that's part of it. Probably one of the most wearing things that was really difficult for me recently, and why we had to delay this podcast interview, was I had to do, I did a funeral for a 3-year-old little boy. And it wasn't like it was a long-term thing. It was very sudden. He had been killed instantly. And there was no time, you know, maybe a day to grieve with him on life support. It was not somebody in our church. It was just someone in our community. And what do you do in that time as a church? You open up your doors and you just say whatever you need, whatever you want to do. And there was a time where I just didn't feel, I didn't know how to feel.
Yeah.
This is someone else's child, but I have a 3-year-old at home.
Yeah.
And you don't really have the emotional capacity to have crying moments, because you're trying to be strong for somebody else. You're trying to just be that. And then at the end of the funeral, I had my time alone. I couldn't breathe. I kind of just felt like, what is coming over me? And I went into an office and I just started bawling. I started crying because it didn't hit. And then here's the reality. And it was after the fact, but that made me feel human. Sometimes as pastors, you kind of get numb to things, and it's not to really make us, you know, superior, but we get numb and we forget that there are real people with real pain. And to think of a 3-year-old little boy to be gone and taken away that quickly is probably one of the worst pains. And, you know, sitting with the family and going, what do you do with this?
Yeah.
What's next? And, you know, that's probably the worst thing about ministry, is you have to be strong for those that are that are in pain. I spoke with a pastor last week, and she said, you know, you're first responders. All pastors are first responders. You never think of it that way, but we have to be careful with how we react in situations. And these conversations between us and, you know, we need to help each other in that, because I'm sorry, but it really sucks. And that's probably the worst part about ministry, is you don't want to stray someone away. If anything, you want to just point them closer to Jesus. You want to point them to say, it is going to be okay. But how do you tell that to a grieving parent? It takes time. It takes relationship. It takes building. And I would say that in the 1 year, that's the one thing I didn't like, that I'm thankful I got to do it, in the sense of be there for the family, but I wish it never happened.
Can I just say, Gary, so people are listening to this, they can't see your eyes right now, but I can actually see not just the empathy, but the compassion that you have just even for that family who you didn't even know, not a part of your church. And how that not only do you embrace it, but you've embraced them in that moment. And I just want to encourage you, man, that is Jesus. You are being Jesus right there, and being available. And you're right, man. We get some of the worst of the worst scenarios in ministry sometimes, but that's the role. That's what we're called to do. That's what Jesus did and continues to do even with us. And I think, you know, to draw back to what you'd said earlier, I'm an emotional person, man. I think that actually, I know I've told you this before, I feel like you're a better pastor than me in a lot of ways, because you can be present with people sometimes in a way that I still have not, you know, even after 20 plus years, learned to do. And I'm continually trying to grow and to be like, but to just be there and be present, and to say, this sucks, and I'm just going to cry with you. That is the heart of our Savior. And I'm just thankful that, man, you're the right guy for the job. I'll just be honest.
I appreciate that, Chad. I've learned with you, and I've walked alongside with you and other leaders within our movement, that I guess you could say, but I want to explain the realness of what's happening in our culture with leaders and churches, is that, when situations like that happen, the disunity in the churches across the country just appall me. Mm-hmm. They make me wonder why do we have the attitude of we have to be a superior mindset versus love on those around you? And it really was a realization for me. I live an hour away from Chicago. So, you know, everyone has their opinions on, oh man, you live here, you live there, and, you know, they're this or that, but politically, whatever. However, it really is, that stuff doesn't matter in the end.
Right.
All the crap that people talk about doesn't matter. It's people. People matter in the end. We get to take people to heaven. And so that's where that situation regarding the three-year-old little boy, I was so just lost on how you even handle that, made me realize that all the other stuff around us just truly, that just doesn't matter. People matter. Now, granted, are we surprised by what's happening in the world? No, we shouldn't be surprised. If you read your Bible, you're not surprised by what's happening in the world right now. You know, it's just a matter of time until we just see Jesus, right? But in all reality, that moment was a real breaking point for me. And I just realized, time to grow up a little bit. But thank you, Chad. I appreciate the word of encouragement there, just because that I walked with you during your first funeral, mm-hmm. you know, and that.
Which was for a premature baby as well. So that's, mm-hmm. I know that pain. It's not easy. It's not easy at all.
Yeah. Mm.
Wanting to be just cognizant of your time, are you okay to just do a couple more questions?
Yeah.
Okay. So what is a question, especially in your first year, that nobody seems to ask you, but you wish that they would?
Would you like $1 million?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so what's the other question that... I mean, that's a good one, though.
Yeah,
that is a good one.
Like, what would I do with $1 million?
I often say we only need just $1 million donor, and our budget is more than set, like triple.
Right? Wouldn't that be awesome? What is one question that no one asked, but I wish they would? Something that I'm working on here, and someone asked me recently here at the 1 year mark. Are you okay?
Yeah.
Someone in the church, they finally asked me, are you okay?
It's good.
And I was very careful because I have my circle of friends that I talk to that, you know, it goes God and then my wife, you know, that's my circle. It goes God, my wife. And then I just go to my pastoral friends. Those are the influence that have been through ministry with me. And so I'm very careful, but I was glad that someone actually cared to ask. And I made me think, am I okay? Well, I was up at 2:45 Saturday night because something woke me up and it was hard to fall back to sleep. And it's those moments where you wonder, are you really okay? What's causing you to not get good rest? Or I've had this hip injury that, you know, for the past year that I've been going to a chiropractor, and it's still, I don't know, it's just one of those things where I may just have to live with this pain, and I can feel it on stage when I'm, you know, when I'm speaking. And, you know, that question, are you okay? Man, I'm like, I think I am, but I also have to have that self-awareness, that valuable conversation, and just say, this is where I'm struggling, or this is where I'm hurt, or this is, you know, it just depends on what you want to tell people, because I'm going through many different things, as we all are as leaders. And I still question, am I okay here? Am I okay there? Am I okay with this relationship? Am I okay with what I said? You know, and I'm sure every pastor, after they speak, have those doubts. You walk off and you're like, I should have never said that. Or did I just say that? And those are just those moments of the doubt. But that question, finally someone asked me, are you okay? That was nice to actually hear someone care to ask that question. Doesn't mean I think our church is loving and they care, but mm-hmm. someone actually asked that question. And I was like, dang.
Wow.
Okay. Thank you.
That is so good. I think it hits on really an important piece of what has contributed to longevity in ministry for me anyways, if you want to call it longevity. But that we have friends, contemporaries, or those even who've gone before us that are looking back and doing welfare checks and saying, hey, are you okay? You know, I'm just checking in. How are you doing? You know, kind of a thing. And so, you know, anybody in ministry that'd be listening to this right now, I would just encourage you, if God has put one of your friends on your heart that is doing something, you know, in ministry or whatever, that is the Holy Spirit saying, reach out and just say, hey, how's it going?
Yeah.
What do you need? Or do you just want to vent?
Yeah, those are important. I think even Trey Abney did it best in our EHL class. How's your marriage? You know, those are the real question that pastors need to be asked, because, you know, you guys, Brenton, Chad, you probably have grown up and go, man, pastors, they got it together. And then you get to know them, you're like, whoa, like real life really happened. I used to think my pastor growing up was like the next thing next, like it was Jesus and then him. And then you come to realize, oh, pastors are people too. Like we make mistakes. And so that's a very real thing.
That's good. That's good. Last question. We'll get you out on this one. Okay. So you've gone a whole year. Good job, Gary. Yeah. Keep going. Thanks. Don't quit. But looking back, what would you say to you 1 year ago?
Say yes to less.
That's good.
That is what I would say. That's probably a big one. And I'd probably be like, what do you mean, dude? But really focus on your community, focus on your local church. That's probably the best thing you can do. You know, denominationally, whatever it is across the world, you never want to downplay it, but man, to really just focus on the local versus everything else makes a big difference. Because how was it back 100 years ago, even 60 years ago? You had your own church. It was your community. And it wasn't all this other hoopla where, you know, the enemy can easily come in different places and make you self-doubt and all that stuff. But really focus on your local, on your church, your community, your region, I guess you would say, that speaks volumes.
Well, that's awesome. And I think it speaks actually to what you have been saying throughout this whole conversation of relationships being most important, and just stay focused on the relationships that God has placed right in front of you, whether that's your marriage, your family, you know, the friends or the community that God has called you to minister to. That's good stuff. That's good stuff.
Yeah. And I would say that the best part of relationship is a true testimony to Bethany and I and our marriage, who we are as people. We balance each other out. We love being with people. You guys know that, you know, when you see us at camps or when we're at conferences, we're always talking to people because that's all that matters are people. And so relationship is huge. And I've met people, I would say I've had better conversations with some doors or walls than some other people that are just really hard to break. But you eventually learn that you'll get to know them. You get to the core and you get to realize that there's more to the story of people's lives, and helps grow in that self-awareness for them as well. So now we love relationship. That's one of the biggest things.
That's an amazing takeaway. And I want to say, Gary, thank you for honestly, thank you for just being real and transparent here about your first year's experience. You know, I think there's a lot that those that have been in ministry, maybe even the role that you are, have served for much longer can take away, and maybe even going back to what it was all about to begin with. So thank you for being here with us today. I really just appreciate you. And man, I'm proud of you. You've come so far just in the time that I've known you. And I'm excited to see what God continues to do through you and through the ministry you and Bethany are doing there in Genoa.
Thank you, guys. I love you both, and I'm thankful for just the investments and this opportunity.
Well, thanks for joining us for this episode of Ministry Without Hating It. We hope it's helped you take a step further to loving what you do more through the wisdom of others. We want to again thank today's guest, Gary Rocha. Man, just really appreciate his heart and his love for people. If we can just remember to keep the people and the relationships first that God has placed right in front of us, I think that's going to serve us for a very long time. If you'd like to connect further with Gary, we've made some of the links and connection points available in the show notes. And as always, you can find more episodes and resources at withouthatingit.com. And don't forget to subscribe to Ministry Without Hating It wherever it is that you get your podcasts, so you don't miss out on our future episodes. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.